You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Katie Tunstall. What can I say about Katie Tunstall that has already been said? She is one of the strongest examples of being a human being in this world. A super talented musician, a career spanning so many amazing records, and I mean, honestly, if you're listening to this, the last thing you want to hear is my voice. You want to hear Katie. You want to hear Katie being her strong, hilarious, on the point, straightforward self. And that's exactly what you're going to hear with this talk. So let's just jump right into it. This is the 405 Exchange with Katie Tunstall. Enjoy. So tell me this, when you get to the end of recording an album, do you find yourself surprised by what you made?
Yes. I think, you know, once you're, when you're at the end of it and you're kind of still in that hermetically sealed bubble of whatever situation you've created to try and make that music, you do have an understanding. And I actually saw Mitski posted a tweet about this, who I love. Recently she tweeted that you just look back on this work that you've done and you're just like, how the fuck did I do that? How did I write those songs? How did I write 12, 11 songs in like a reasonably short amount of time? And it always makes you end up it's just this daunting feeling of doing the next one, and then you somehow manage to pull it out of the bag. None of us know what we're doing or how we do it.
It's incredible hearing that from you, though, because at this point, I mean, it always has been, but at this specific point, creating albums and touring and writing music has literally been your life. It's been more of your life than it hasn't been.
Yes, it's true. It's very weird to think about it like that, but yes, it's true. And I think one thing that I have come to understand is just to trust that subconscious creative part of my brain, which I'm not in control of. I've never subscribed to writer's block. I just don't accept it. So as far as I feel about it, I think it's arrogant to expect your brain to just produce material when it suits you. It's like you don't even really understand or control the process that goes into being able to write this music. And I feel like if I'm sitting there trying to write a song and it's not coming, there are just so many, you know, like choices of inspiration and stimulation that you can go and educate oneself, whether it be a book or a movie or just a walk in nature or a walk in the city or just sit and have a coffee and people watch. And then you just wait until the inspiration comes, which usually happens at about 3 a.m, which now I've learned you have to get out of bed and deal with it. Otherwise, you're going to forget it.
Well, it's good to have that word of wisdom. You know, I started this out asking you about that, the surprise, because when I think about Wax, it's such a different record for you, both sonically and lyrically. And I really...
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and I would really love to know, where did you find yourself at the start of making it? Because I feel like what's very interesting for you and how your career has been, you're always in a different place, particularly between when you started making a record than to the end of it. So where were you at the start of making this one?
It's a really cool question. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I'm on record 6, and I've made a number of little in-between records as well. So it's the 6th proper studio release, but it's very strange, the feeling of looking into the corner of your room and there's this growing pile of records that you've made that is completely soundtracking what's happened in your life. So you're starting to see this arc of your own story soundtracked by this really rapidly growing, pretty big body of work. And I'm really proud that the records that I've made have not only been the soundtrack to my personal life and what's been going on and the things I've been experiencing, but they're also this, you know, illustration of my really quite radical changes in interest creatively and sonically. So Tiger Suit, my 3rd record, for example, was a real kind of concerted effort to see if I could marry electronic dance music and folk songwriting together. And I went to Berlin and, you know, tried to summon the gods of EDM and David Bowie and U2 and Hansa. And then the fourth record, Invisible Empire, Crescent Moon, is a mood record. It's basically a folk record that was made in Tucson, Arizona, and all recorded live to tape. And I think on each album, you can just enjoy not only hearing different stories from me, but also getting a peek into where my brain was at in terms of what I was interested in, where I went. And so I always usually get this vibe of what the album's going to be before I make it. And it's sort of, I always think that it's like, it must be like a woman when she knows she's pregnant. It's like waking up in the middle of the night and going, oh my God, it's happening. And I just have this feeling of what, usually before any music comes, I just get this really strong sense of the atmosphere, the vibe, the style of what I want to make. And with Wax, I wanted to make a rock record. I could just hear these riffs. I wanted to hear, like, really kind of confident riffs with attitude and storytelling through the instrumentation as well as the lyrics, really.
It's really beautiful to hear you talk about your album making process in that way.
Yeah. Well, I think also with this record, there's usually something that sparks each album, whether it be, you know, the last one, Kim's moving to California and listening to Tom Petty and Fleetwood Mac driving on the PCH. But this one was actually inspired by one song, and it was a song called The Healer, which I wrote for this EP, which came out before Kim, because I kind of needed to set the reset button for my fans and press the reset button and let them know that I was not now making folk music, you know, because the fourth record had been this kind of moody folk record. I was like, no, I still am making stuff that is signature to me, which people had got used to, which is pretty up tempo, kind of a lot. Yeah, there's always a mixture, but there's always quite a lot of up tempo stuff. And The Healer I wrote kind of, it was about being at Glastonbury Festival, and I had a pretty wild night one night, and just it was just this amazing kind of connection. It's very, quite a hippie festival, Glastonbury, but it's, you know, one thing when people let their hair down, it's another thing entirely when 120,000 British people let their hair down, because that is a wonder of the world, quite frankly. And it's just the most amazing atmosphere, and just felt very connected to nature and everything and everyone. And that's where that song came from. And it was not only this kind of out and out headbanging rock song, it also just made me want to go and trash a hotel room. It was like this really full on, like, just rocking tune that made me feel different. And I was like, I want to feel like that more.
Yeah. Well, you know, I also feel like that element, particularly in Wax, must have been inspired by the element of performing live. Like, I last saw you performing at Irving Plaza when you were touring for Ken.
Oh, cool. Yes, yeah. Yes. Was that solo?
No, you had the band with you.
I had the band, awesome.
Yeah.
I love that place.
Yeah, and it felt like when I, because I've seen you live so many times over the years. I think the first.
Oh, well, thank you for the support.
Yeah, of course. Well, thank you for always making great albums and doing great shows. It makes it quite easy. But
excellent.
I bring that show up because in that particular show, it felt like you were fully inspired by that album, and it was very much like embedded within how you're performing on stage. And it makes me wonder, like, do you feel like you took that into making Wax? Because I feel like I heard that when I listened to the album.
Yeah, I think that there's been this shift for me in that space between my fourth album and my fifth album. So I basically kind of sold everything I owned and moved. You know, my dad had died, my marriage had gone wrong, and I didn't really know what I was going to do next. And it was a pretty kind of Matrix-like unplug of waking up in a slimy pod to reality, of just going, oh, things are not how I thought they were. And I need to be honest about that and look at why I ended up unhappy. And I basically spent a long time sorting myself out and getting to a much better place. And so that's where came, the last, that fifth record came from. And once I'd made that record, it really dawned on me that it was all about the sort of soul rising. It was all about the spirit and about overcoming, you know, spiritual obstacles in your life and growing as a person. And then I decided to make this trilogy. I thought it was such a great opportunity to make three records together of soul, body and mind. So Wax was always going to be the body record. And, you know, it's that punchline joke at the end of the exploration into your own spirituality and soul existence, is that you've got to take a shit. And you're going to fall over and you're going to get drunk and you're going to make stupid decisions and you're going to hurt people and you're going to get hurt. And you've got this ridiculous meat vehicle that you have to drive whilst having this kind of, you know, extraordinary experience. You're limited by this body and the brain and the physicality. And so that's what this record is about. And electric guitar for me is the perfect instrument. It's just so visceral and so, it's just got teeth, you know?
Yeah.
And playing the electric guitar for me is certainly the most physical experience. And it was really interesting too, because I hadn't explored that yet. It's one thing that I've not looked into is playing, you know, I have never kind of dived as deep into my electric guitar playing.
Yeah, and it's such a joy in how you did that. You know, I want to...
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to bring something up for people listening who might not actually be familiar. Wax is the second of a trilogy of albums you're making, Kin being the first. I don't know if you've been asked this already, and you probably have, so sorry if it's quite a repetitive thing to ask, but where did the idea of making a trilogy of albums come from? And rather than just, like, where it came from, what do you feel it is that keeps it being a goal for you?
So... one thing I discovered through the years of making records and certainly songwriting is that my brain works, and performing actually, my brain works way better under pressure. And if there isn't an end date, or if there isn't like a live situation, I'm much more likely to, in a performing sense, make a mistake or get it wrong, and from a creation point of view, I get lazy and I don't really graft if there isn't an end point to look forward to and to be ready for. So I started already to sort of set pressure on myself and set goals. And, you know, when I recorded Kin, I booked the studio time, for example, so I knew I was going in the studio on January the 11th, which actually turned out to be the day that it was announced that David Bowie had passed away. But I've set that date in my calendar, and at Christmas time, I still had five songs to write. I was five songs short for the record of songs I wanted. And I knew I had to write them, and I didn't get freaked out, because I knew that having that date of the studio recording would make me finish them, and it did. I went to Taos, New Mexico, and I went to Joshua Tree, and I sat and wrote songs for 8 hours a day and wrote some really good stuff. And I just trusted that it would work. And so this is really like a kind of macro version of that, of going, right, I'm going to set myself a bigger challenge of writing not one album, but three. And also I love trilogies. I love a longer arc. I love a longer story and a more in-depth, you know, nerding out over the connections between things. And but, you know, with the advent of TV series coming to the fore and actually really competing against movies, being able to spend that time getting to know characters and storylines and get deep, nitty-gritty, I love that. And I think that there's a real opportunity with making these, you know, making these three records that people, I think, will be able to get to know me better that way. And, you know, it's coincided with a real pact with myself to just be as honest as possible and really find that that kind of beautiful balance, which I think makes you the best writer you can be, which is strength and vulnerability in equal measure.
I think that's very telling within the songs themselves, particularly like throughout Wax, because I feel like
I agree. It's like it's probably the toughest sounding record I've made, but also lyrically the most telling, I think.
Yeah, because it almost feels like if there was a theme within the album, it's like an abrasive means of owning oneself. Like, I feel like that's what you achieved.
Yes, that's a lovely way of putting it, actually. I will steal that. Thank you.
Yeah, please do.
I love that. An abrasive way of owning oneself. It's really nice. And but, you know, I think it's also just there's an irreverence to it where it's the sound of zero fucks being given anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I hear that. I feel like that's always been prevalent in your songwriting, but I hear a song like Backlash and Vinegar, which has a sense of contemplation, but also like a strong sense of like, this is who I am.
That one in particular as well is quite accusatory as well, which I've maybe kind of avoided. I think, you know, I grew up a good girl, so confrontation and kind of aggressive assertion have not come naturally to me, but actually as I explore that, and I think that it's something that's been interesting to explore at this time when the Me Too movement and feminism and, you know, women's issues have been discussed so much and, you know, the torch is shining on them. And it's very liberating realizing that being, you know, what I always maybe thought was masculine is not masculine, it's female. It's just a different type of femininity. It can all come under womanhood. And so there was no longer any fear about owning that part of myself as well.
Yeah, and that freedom really does come across. And I even think of like I think even like on a song like The River, I think that song is a big turning point for you. And it's a track that feels vital.
Yeah, it's one of those songs where you're singing it and you're really feeling, I need to sing this.
Yeah, it really
is. It's like medicinal, you know? It's like a kind of howl.
Did that particular song come about differently than other songs on this album? Because it feels like it did.
Yeah, very much so, actually, because that song's old. So that song was written about 10 years ago.
Really?
And I actually wrote that song with Martin Tarefa, who I also wrote Other Side of the World with. I wrote Funny Man with him. And he's a long-standing collaborator, and I love writing with him. And part of the reason I really love writing with Martin is he's just a support. He's a real supporter of honesty and vulnerability, but he's also got this really interesting, he's Swedish, he's got this interesting approach to chord structure and turnarounds and things like that, but both of us are just addicted to melody, we're all about melody, and kind of just taking a left turn at the last minute when you think you know what's going to happen in a song and it doesn't quite do what you're expecting, which Nick McCarthy does as well, actually, who I wrote with, who produced the record, Nick McCarthy from Franz Ferdinand, of course, So The River, I hadn't quite got the chorus lyrics right at the time, and I knew it was a really good song, but it just didn't fit any of the records I made between writing it and now. And then it came to this album, and I was just like, that song needs to be on this record. And I've just been waiting for the right time, and I tweaked the chorus lyrics, so it was all about myself. There was a bit of kind of third person in the original, and I was like, no, it's got to be all from me. And it just really fit with what's going on at the moment, where this song is about just wanting to wash yourself clean from the bullshit that's going on, whether it be politics or a relationship or just toxic behavior or you know, anything that's coming at you that you don't want on your skin, basically.
Yeah, what's really intriguing to me about that is because we talked about your past albums and your career thus far, and like, it's really interesting that you've cultivated this fan base where they kind of expect that type of honesty from you. Like,
yeah, it's good for me. It's good for me to remember that.
Yeah.
It's good to be held accountable by your fans. You know, it's for what you're making is for them. I mean, I always just make music for myself, and I trust that if I like it, they're going to like it. And we have the same taste, and that's why they're fans of what I do. And you always, you know, when you decide to do different things and try different things, you're always going to, that fan base is always going to shape shift a little bit. Some people are going to love what you've done next, and some people aren't. And but for me, it's really just about building up a really good quality body of work. And so if some 15-year-old who's really into using a lead pedal finds it, they can go back and listen to 6 really good albums.
Yeah.
And discover, you know, and it's not just like, oh, it was just that one song. No, there's a bunch of shit that you can listen to.
I feel like Dark Side of Me is one of those tracks that must leave you... Well, it left me surprised, because it's one of those songs that reminds me how direct and honest songwriting could be. And I bring this track up because I imagine this to be one that people have been relating to a lot. That when people come up to you, they want to talk about that one. Has that been the case?
Yeah, that song is raw. Really, really raw. And there is a distinct added gear of power in that song, and I don't quite know what happened, but it's a real, you know, I feel like Pete Townsend doing the downstroke and windmilling on this chord. It's just massive. And it's, you know, the song is about an acknowledgement of failings and flaws within yourself and not apologizing for it. And yes, it has been a song that a lot of people have mentioned, for sure.
You know, I remember a few years back, we actually talked at City Winery, and,
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and I wanted to say this then, but, I didn't have the chance. I truly feel that, and this is a bit of a question, it's more for me, but I felt like Invisible Empire and Crescent Moon was such a big creative achievement for you, with, like, everything you'd been through, and the fact you're able to pour so much of yourself within that record.
Maybe more than any other record, that is what I was describing to you. When you look back at something and you're like, how the F did I do that?
Yeah, and also it's like, I felt, because, you know, I feel like with a lot of musicians, it's rare for you to see a shift in one's career in almost real time. And I think that's one of those records where it really much did that. Do you feel like the experience of making and touring that record has really influenced you thus far? Because I think it has. I'd love to hear you talk about that particular. I mean,
making that record was a joy because it meant that I could run away from my life, basically, because I went to Tucson, Arizona to make the record. And my dad had died and my marriage had broken up. And so I literally loved getting on a plane and getting the hell out of Dodge and going and making music. And basically, you know, it was totally therapeutic, like putting that pain into music. But the funny thing was actually that the first half of that record was written before any of that happened. But I was in pain. I wasn't happy at that time in my life. And there's a very weird kind of fortune-telling quality about a lot of the songs that you would have thought were written after that, but actually weren't. And that's why I split it into two halves, Invisible Empire and Crescent Moon. Invisible Empire was just this, you know, emotional city that I'd built within myself, which I realized was bullshit, and I had to tear it down. And Crescent Moon was the beginning of something new. And I have to say, I had a really fucking hard time touring that record. It was the first time I ended up touring solo, and the gigs were amazing, and it was really emotional, but it was very staid. I was wearing suits and shirts and bolo ties, and it was in really nice theaters, and I wasn't sweating, and there wasn't a lot of kinetic joy. And by a couple of years after touring that, I was just like, I don't think I want to tour ever again.
Oh, wow.
And I really needed to properly unplug from it all. But I just hadn't really given myself any time to heal after what happened.
See, this is what I love about you, though, Katie, because, and thanks again for taking the time to chat with us. I only have a couple more questions for you. But what I love about what you just said there, I mean, obviously there's like loads of musicians that I love and other musicians I've had the chance to talk to. But when I talk to you, and with the way you describe that so much, it's so interesting how everything you've done and everything you're doing is informed by your experiences in almost like in a real-time way. Like, it's very particular and specific to you that I find very interesting.
Yeah, I think, thanks. I think you know, I've always just wanted to approach this life and have an extraordinary time. And as getting into my 40s, it's just like, oh, that also includes things being really shit sometimes. but it's still extraordinary, and you can't have that extraordinary experience if everything's easy, you know. And it's actually all about how you deal with the difficulty is actually the most interesting bit of all. And I've met musicians who I will not name because it's not fair, but who, if they get too happy, they need to actually sabotage themselves, you know, their own life to cause shit so that they feel that they've got something to write about.
Yeah.
It's really hard to write happy songs. I don't know if other people have found that, but I think it's just that natural kind of pensive internalizing and analyzing that comes with negative emotion, that you want to sit down, you want to write about it, you want to analyze it, you want to pour over it and feel it. If you're happy, you just fucking take a cab to the beach.
Exactly. <know? laughs>
You're not like going, oh my god, I'm so happy, where's my guitar?
Yeah. No, that's a very
it's like you point. Don't you live in the moment when you're happy, and when you're upset you live in the past, or you live in this fearful future that you think is ahead of you, and it's much more conducive to actually writing material. So I always consider it like a real major achievement if you manage to write a good happy song.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that, especially from like a music fan's perspective, because you do hear the difference, you really do.
Yeah.
Before I let you run here, I just have one more question. What's it feel like to know that you still have so much to say? Because we've talked about your career all throughout this talk, you know, all the albums. You mentioned how you're at this stage now. I feel like as a creator, and just, you know, knowing that you have another record ahead, it must feel very nice knowing there's still so much to say, not just with your voice, but also with your guitar. What does that feel like?
It feels really good. I have to say, I feel relieved, because I remember very clearly being in that desert hinterland of feeling completely uninspired. And I think one of the most frightening things at that time was that I just completely lost any conviction. I was not in touch with myself, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I didn't even know what made me happy. And it was just, it's just a desert, and it's grim, and it's not a fun place to be as someone who likes making things. But you know, you have to look behind you at that stuff and tell the story of it. The storytelling is where the, you know, where you can literally turn shit into gold and make your royalties. But also take something that other people recognize as a really uncomfortable place of existence and actually turn it into something really useful and sometimes really joyful. And that to me is just the biggest, deepest area of gratitude for me as a singer, is that I can take a shitty wet Wednesday night and turn it into someone's best night ever. It's the coolest.
Yeah.
It's the coolest.
Katie, thanks so much for chatting with me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's so nice to talk to you again. Thank you. It was a great interview.
Yeah, I really do appreciate it. For people listening, I'm in New York. You're in Glasgow. Before you sign off, you want to tell people what you're doing at the minute? Because you were telling me before the recording. Yes. It's really cool.
There's an annual festival here in Glasgow called Celtic Connections, and it basically brings musicians from all different walks of life and backgrounds and styles to celebrate Celtic music. And it doesn't mean that you have to play Scottish music. It's really just about roots music. And so we're getting together. We're playing at the concert hall in Glasgow. So it's a bit of a fancy show. And we're all going to play our own stuff with, you know, each other, backing each other. And then the second half of the show, because it's the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road by the Beatles, we are playing the whole record start to finish. And I'm delighted to report that I am kicking it off with Come Together, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, man.
Of all time.
That is mega.
I've been practicing this sound.
That is so wicked.
Sounding awesome.
Oh, well, I better let you get to it. I can't wait to have you back here in New York.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm going to be there in May.
Yeah.
Very boring. Yeah. So
one of the best venues in the city.
One of the best venues in the world, dude.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, Katie, thanks so much.